Hello, and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Mike DeZenon, recording from Nicosia, a very warm Nicosia, and with me in the studio, all the way from Berlin, I have Chiara Rosselli. Chiara, welcome.
Hello, Magda.
To introduce you to the listeners, Chiara is a process designer and political dialogue curator, but she's also the co-founder and executive director of the Apropos Group. Chiara, tell us a little bit more about yourself and about the Apropos Group and what you do.
Yes, happy to. So the Apropos Group is a new think tank that is born actually out of the 8-year experience with the Open European Dialogue, which is currently Europe's first cross-party and cross-border informal network and dialogue platform for elected policymakers. So we work with parliamentarians across parties and across borders to encourage a better political dialogue between different perspectives at the European level. And what we realized working with this audience is really how much the design of the way you bring people together in a conversation can really dramatically impact the outcome of these conversations. And that's why we set up Apropos together with some colleagues in January this year to really test and disseminate and research new methods for better political dialogue and collaboration in the political arena.
So to get to the real question I want to ask is, how can process design help fix politics? How can it help? Because as we said before, all processes like peace negotiations, how can it help fix what is happening? Because the result of politics is something that affects all of us.
Yeah, well, the starting point of really this, let's call it a field that we're trying to develop as political process design, is that there's a realization from our perspective, more of an observation of the inadequacy of the democratic infrastructures that we have at the moment. And they're just not up to date with how society also has changed, but also with how the main challenges of politics have changed. And so we feel the intuition that the thought process behind the application or our desire to apply process design in politics is that the dissatisfaction we feel today towards the political system is rooted probably not in a specific policy challenge, but really in the how of politics. So the how those decision-making and political processes are functioning, or rather are potentially not functioning as well as could be.
Well, we all know that democracy is overrated in the times that we are living, because democracy nowadays, you vote once and that's the end of the conversation. Or most people think like that.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, it's funny that you said it in those words, because one of the new sort of taglines that we've started to use to explain a little bit what we're trying to do or hoping to do or hoping to contribute, you know, to our sector is a quote from Yuval Noah Harari that says, "Democracy is a conversation." And what we're trying to do is make sure that the quality of that conversation can be improved. But to be honest, Magda, I agree with you in that I think that profoundly we've forgotten that democracy is not about a specific outcome, and it's not even only about a specific solution to a problem, but it really is a conversation. And it is an exercise of compromise, of understanding different points of view, and how can we, you know, agree to disagree on certain things, but still be together, thrive together as a society.
And listen to each other. Listen to each other regardless of who's right and who's wrong, but allowing everyone's voice to have the chance to be heard if we wanted to be heard.
Exactly. And unfortunately, the way that we see often the political spaces that we inhabit, it's, you know, there's more of a debate function that is being covered, which is very important, but the part about dialogue is not really present. And dialogue intended not as, you know, two parties that are not engaging in a contest where there's one opinion that wins, but dialogue as a process through which you learn about the perspectives of others as well.
But the dialogue's also important because the two of us might be having a conversation, but are we sure that the conversation and the decision we need to reach reflects the people it's going to affect? And it's not just me against you.
Yes.
Am I making sense? So it's not a case of one of us needs to win. It's a case of we need to find a decision that suits the collective that this needs to apply to.
Yeah. And I think that's why we've seen so much push towards more inclusion of citizen in decision-making processes. And that's, I think, a really interesting perspective or point to reflect on, because on the one hand, the effective engagement of stakeholders is key, like you said, to make sure that the outcome actually represents the benefit of a majority, let's say. But we have to really concentrate, and that's what we're trying to think a bit more about, is what does it look like to engage stakeholders in an effective manner? Because often also these fora that are being designed are not necessarily bringing always a more profound understanding of the challenges, or they're not necessarily being designed in ways that with the sufficient care, essentially, to be able to do what they want to do, what we call fit for purpose design, right?
Okay. Hmm. Okay, Clayma, so what you're saying is that the clarity of what we need to do is sometimes not always clear. Or explain
yes.
it. Explain
yes.
a little bit more of what you say.
So one of our principles is the idea that to design a good conversation space, it needs to be fit for purpose. And to do that, it needs to align what we call the three Ps. So people, process, and purpose. Unfortunately, often we don't spend enough time looking at, you know, what the purpose of a given conversation actually is, and how can we design a space that brings us closer to that purpose. And I'll give you an example because I think it just makes it a lot more tangible. And it's the idea, for example, that there is this European institution called COSAC, where national parliamentarians meet twice a year to advance better collaboration, better dialogue between Europe's national parliaments. But then the way that the actual meeting is designed is a set of 1 minute and a half statements that follow one another with very limited then Q&A at the end. And so that's just one of those key examples where we're not being as clear as we need to be about what the purpose and what is the realistic objective also of certain engagements.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Mm. So who is your client? Who is a potential client?
Currently, we work a lot for the philanthropic sector, and we work with policymakers, individual members of parliament. But we would like to be able to do our work also for public institutions more. So advice, you know, institutions on how they can maybe adapt and have small tweaks to the work that they're doing so that they can become more effective and impactful. Mm. And I think there was something that, I mean, ideally also political parties that need to discuss within themselves, like how do they move forward with different perspectives that they have inside the same party, civic dialogues. I mean, it can really be applied anywhere.
I think a lot of the political parties who are the root, which are the root of the lack of democracy, for want of a better word, is there's so much of an old boys club inside. How do you actually find the space to change the way they operate? Because there's a party policy and there are people that control groups within that party. But what about things like peace processes? As we discussed before we started recording, I'm very interested. We have a peace process that has been going on since 1974, almost 50 years old.
Yeah.
We keep on doing it in the same way and we're wondering why we don't have a different solution. It's very bottom down because there's very little civic engagement. Recently, in 2015, they added technical committees and working groups.
Mm-hmm.
they were chose randomly, people were appointed randomly. No one really knows how much they actually affect the people at the top. Mm-hmm. The political parties advise the president, but when he goes to the table to negotiate, he's accountable only to himself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How can you change? When you actually say it, I'm wondering why no one has thought of it before. We've all thought of it before. But how do you change it? How can you change it? How can you expect a different solution 50 years down the lane because you keep on doing the same thing over and over again?
I would like to keep listening to you, to be honest. But yeah, I love that. I love how you framed it. It's just really so important to keep in mind that if we want a different outcome, we need to change what we're doing. And we need to also be bold enough to try out different formats, different changes to the processes that we have in place. And I also want to be very sort of humble, you know, like the peace processes, decision-making processes, you know, they are the way they are because they represent probably hundreds of years of democratic infrastructure design. And
add the word patriarchy to that. Democratic patriarchal design.
I'm trying to keep it politically correct.
That's okay. I'll be unpolitically correct.
Okay. Sorry, what was I saying? I lost a bit of my train of thought. But yeah, so we need to, so I understand that they're designed in that way for a reason. I understand that. But also we need to test out new changes and we need to at least put ourselves in the space where we imagine that the things we've been doing the same way forever can and need to change. And that's one of the big, I think, pushes for us, that what makes us curious about this work is really to see, you know, if society has changed so much, the way we consume information has changed, the way we create relationships has changed, how are we integrating this new know-how, this new way that society works into the political processes that we are designing? And that's, you know, just a big question.
Other big question is, how has our relationship to power evolved? Has it evolved?
Yes, that is a massive one. Mm.
Sorry, well, I keep on interrupting you.
No, that's good. That's supposed to be a conversation, so that's
But to
great.
Me, that's the, to me, in terms of my, our context, that's the biggest challenge because we are an ex-colony, so the relationship to power has always been decisions from above.
Yeah.
So how do you suddenly get the mentality, and this is an observation, not a criticism, to the Cypriot community, there's always been the bottom-down relationship. How do you change it even within civil society? How can you do changes within that?
Yeah. But I think, you know, why I started, whenever I get asked about apropos, I really start from the Open European Dialogue because we are practitioners, we're dialogue facilitators, it's what we do. And what we learned is what we want to share, you know, with our sector and the world. And what we learned is, you know, we took something, an audience that people had not so far dared to engage in such an informal manner. And we put them around small tables with a name tag with just their first name on it. No speeches, no even prior list of participants, so that actually these politicians didn't know who they were about to meet. And we did all of these things and we saw the results on the quality of the conversations that they were having. And so that's why we're hoping, you know, to also use and share the example of the Open European Dialogue to encourage others to test out some small tweaks. It doesn't have to, you don't have to change a whole process. That's one of the key principles, in my opinion, of good process design, is it doesn't require an overhaul, but it's small tweaks. You know, can we, for example, dare to have as part of that process also more small table conversations? It's proven that this is one of the easiest ways for us to create more inclusive political dialogue spaces, because maybe you don't get to speak in a sort of plenary setting, because rightfully so, there's power dynamics. There is one person that is tasked to be the rapporteur, to talk. But if you can also integrate these smaller moments of collection, then these voices that are usually marginalized can come out in a greater manner than they do right now. So it's all about, honestly, tweaks and improvements and progress. There's not a silver bullet solution either.
And also you can't do a complete overhaul because there is an existing structure.
Exactly.
So you can only try and improve, as you say, tweak.
Mm-hmm.
In our case, what would you tweak here? Have you any suggestions? Come on, off the top of your head.
I would have to know more about the process, but I really think that one of the key aspects is humanizing the people that are in the room. So making enough time for trust building, which is getting to know the political other without an agenda. So again, I haven't been in your peace processes, so I don't know. Maybe they're doing all of this perfectly and I wouldn't know. But, you know, for example, one of the key learnings that we have is if you want to create trust between people that don't necessarily like each other, you need to do that in a setting and with clear guidelines and rules that whilst they are doing the trust building part, they are not also trying to negotiate something.
Mm.
So the negotiation part, the outcome part needs to be taken off the table. So one of the things we do, and this is obviously completely counterintuitive vis-a-vis the peace process, so we'd have to think together what's the, you know, touch point between these two. But for example, in our dialogues, we between politicians from, you know, center-right, center-left, also some more fringe parties, we don't have final recommendations because the objective is for those people to get to know each other and understand each other. So maybe one of the important things could be to what degree has there been experimentation also with like auxiliary informal spaces that can accompany the peace process, right? What is happening on the sidelines? Because different institutions can have different mandates.
Mm. But it's also a case of because there's a one leader, one person's making the decisions at the top, it's how much can you get to filter to that person at the top. I agree with you. I mean, I think we all have this hope that something can change because this is obviously not working. But I like this idea of tweaks, but I also think there's personal responsibility in wanting to take on the tweaks.
Yes, of course. That's one of the things that I most worry about is I understand our work as something that can really radically, to me, improve the outcomes of, for example, the nonprofit sector. Mm. So all of the auxiliary sector, because I think in that space, we have more of a mandate to experiment and fail.
Yes.
Right. And my biggest worry is, you know, how do you get institutions to start tweaking, to start experimenting? And that's something that requires a bit of thought.
I agree with you because in every work you do, because we are all used to doing things in a certain way.
Yeah.
How when someone comes and says, you know what, this could be working in a better way. How open are you to actually receiving the information? Are you open to receiving the information? To really receive the information, not just listen, but to actually hear. I mean, I work for quite a big law firm.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most successful ones, respected ones on the island. And there's certain things that get done. And I think to myself, why is it done in that way? Why do they actually think that's going to work?
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Yes.
One
of the key principles, and it can also rub some people the wrong way. So I understand that delivery of this information is also important. But it's, you know, we internally to apropos, we call political process design codified common sense. It's just about taking a bit more time and care and dedication to intentionally looking at the details of how you set up a given space, which boils down to how many elements are there, for example, on the agenda. And if you say your purpose is to gain deeper understanding on, for example, X different topics, but you only have 20 minutes to discuss each, then it's design flaw. It's not going to yield that the outcome that you want, right? So clarity of purpose has to be very, and especially one of the big process flaws we see in everywhere is wanting to hit too many objectives yes. with one thing. So lack of patience and lack of also intellectual, like, honesty of saying, well, we can't.
It's not possible.
It's not possible to do all of those things in one meeting of 4 hours. So why are we setting ourselves up for, like, frustrating, you know, circular conversations?
It could also be as simple as, what room are you having the discussion in?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Having, do you want light? Do you want air conditioning? I mean, simple things like that, that people have got one specified conference room and 30 yeah. things on the agenda and think, well, this is going to happen because it's got to happen.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't think, you know what, put a few air conditioning, some croissants and coffee and halving the agenda, and we have this yeah. meeting twice.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's absolutely necessary. I would wonder, like, where also these negotiations are taking place the in Cyprus. But for example, one thing is we always have natural light. If you're going to keep people in a room for
exactly
2 whole days and you're expecting them to really engage and work hard, you know, intellectually, to also overcome their own potentially biases, resistances to listening to others, but then you don't create the conditions for them to actually comfortably do that work. It's not then impossible that the work happens. It just makes it so much less likely, right? That's part of it.
And so they go to these negotiations, and I'll say there are 30 things we've got to do, and we've got 3 days.
Yes, it's too many things.
Instead of saying, you know what, these 4 or 5 of the 30, these 2 or 3 yeah. are the non-negotiables, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And then yeah. if we get past these, then the next, you categorize them. So I agree with you. And I mean, I'm seeing the light now listening to you, that it's all a case of, it's simple things like, don't go in determined to get your own voice heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Actively listen, but go in, not with intention to reach a destination, but with intention to mm-hmm. actually actively engage and actively discuss, and yeah. the destination will arrive.
Ground rules are very important, but they also have to be ground rules that are not naive, you know, that they are consistent with an ask that is reasonable. So, for example, you know, what I would imagine if the important part is to dig deeper into a certain issue and understand better, then of course I would dedicate much more time, you know, whatever time we usually dedicate to understanding or discussing an issue, maybe triple that, in order to give people the time to not only have their voice heard, because it's human. People want their voice heard. So first, what you have to do is make sure everyone feels that they've said their piece. And then while they have 2 extra hours after everyone has said their piece, what are they going to fill that time with? They're going to be able to actually get into a bit more of a listening mode. But, you know, if exploration, and especially with frozen conflicts in general, like, if we need to be able to nudge a deepening of our understanding of a challenge, and the only way to do that is to put people in a position where they feel that if they listen, they won't necessarily lose out.
Yes,
so they won't, right? That's important. So it needs to be safe for them to listen and to let their guard down. Then it means for me that in that specific setup, let's say that day, or maybe even that whole session of 3 days, there will be no decisions made. And that is something that is agreed upon at the beginning. And that puts people in a place mentally where they're like, well, I'm not going to have to use the vulnerability of others to, you know,
to get what I want.
To get what I want, at least not in this session, right? Like, at least maybe 6 months down the line, you'll still do it. But it creates a bit of a nudging environment for people to think differently, not to engage with issues that they've engaged with over and over again without finding new solutions in a different way.
Okay, and you say you work with a lot of NGOs. More the non-profit organizations.
Yeah, we come from the non-profit sector. We come from the think tank field. So we work with think tanks quite a bit and foundations as well. So philanthropic foundations.
And what did you find was your biggest challenge in walking into these spaces when they asked you for help? What did you find was your biggest challenge?
I think the biggest challenge is that the work of a moderator, a dialogue curator, however we want to call it, is perceived as an add-on and not as central to what you're actually doing. I think this is someone yesterday, we were having a drink with some apropos colleagues and friends, and someone yesterday said, you know, the work of the facilitator feels like it's care work. It's something that people, you have to do it for others, but ultimately it is not really respected.
No, right? So you're often, not important.
You're not important. And the challenge is that you are, because you have really some expertise that is specific, not to the topic, where those experts obviously know a lot better than you, but you have a set of skills that can help them advance in finding new avenues, new ways forward in these conversations that they don't have. But that expertise is not respected at the same level. So unfortunately, unless you have a very sort of enlightened person on the other side, what happens is they end up, you know, trying to hire you to do an icebreaker, whilst we're not there to do an icebreaker at the beginning of the conversation. Keep time. We're there to design a process that has a better chance at getting you to where you want to go with this conversation. So it's a completely different magnitude.
They don't realize that without the facilitator, you might not get to where you need to be as a collective. Because
exactly.
You've got a bad facilitator that all she does is icebreakers, whatever.
Yeah.
You need a good facilitator that is both present and absent. So you're there when you need to be, but you step back when the discussion is happening really well. Because I also do, because I'm also involved in NGOs,
yeah,
and I do a lot of facilitation. But I do facilitation, mediation, and somewhere I get lost because a mediator is not allowed to have an opinion. Anyway,
right.
And no one realizes that it actually takes, it's very draining on you because you actually need to focus.
So much.
Without taking a side, but you need to focus to listen to when you can time out, let's go to the other side, or let's change the way this conversation is going.
Yeah.
Are you finding that there's a lot of demand for what you do? Are people recognizing that they need help?
Yes, people recognize they need help. I think the framing of that help is a challenge. That's why we're also trying to really put specific words to it. You know, we're calling it political process design because we don't want it to be confused with, for example, design thinking or even just facilitation. In that they, what we do shares a lot with different other fields, but we want to be able to give it a credibility whereby when you are engaging in political questions, people and institutions recognize that you have experience in that specific field, if you see what I mean.
No, because no, I agree with you.
Right? One of the challenges is often we say, yeah, but that won't work here. Like, I've heard that so many times, right? Like, and the design sprint, for example, is something that we adapted to a political audience, but you need to adapt it and you need to have the credibility for people to believe that you're adapting it coming from a place that you know the sector, you know how people in the sector work.
It's not just a copy paste from some
exactly.
Just somewhere else. You've actually,
because it's
know,
not the same.
You understand and you fine tune it to suit them.
Yeah, yeah. But also one of my personal drives and is the feedback that we get from parliamentarians that is really touching to me.
Tell me.
Because
that's what I want to hear, because the whole point of you doing something, you know you're succeeding when someone comes and says, thank you, it's helped me or it's helped the group.
Yeah.
So tell me, tell us what they've said to you.
Well, you know, just recently, I mean, many things. One of my favorite quotes from the last year is, a member of parliament who essentially said, who has very unpopular, let's say, opinions, but who said, you know, when we are here, this is a unique space because we can disagree, even profoundly disagree, but we remain, you know, respectful, we listen to each other, and that allows also me to think, okay, maybe the other side might have a point.
Okay.
Which is exactly what we're trying to get at, is one of the quotes from one of our co-founders I like to cite often is with a good conversation, you know, you can have the size of any problem. And that's all we want.
Yes.
Is we are not going to solve these problems with process design, but we can help the actors that are responsible for solving them to make progress.
Yes, to approach in a different way, in a bit, another more specific way.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And also, you know, if you asked me this, but recently we convened a group of 20 members of parliament who were interested in understanding a bit better the situation, the potential evolution of the war in Ukraine, and how could they contribute to supporting the efforts of their Ukrainian colleagues. And one thing that touched me is that one of our members said, you know, we need exactly what it is that you provide, which is a politically neutral space, a space that is not about negotiation. It's about understanding each other because we have other fora to negotiate. But then we need a neutral facilitator that can guide these conversations. And for me, that was obviously very impactful on a personal note, because it gives me a glimpse of a different future, right? Like, what if we were, and I'm just going to say as it is, crazy enough to think of the world of the role of a political facilitator in our political institutions, right?
Yeah.
Why not have more of an active role for people who specific expertise is about guiding neutrally but with intent and purpose a conversation forward.
Well, I think the result of that would be a lot fewer circuses, because we've seen throughout the world parliament exploding into a circus of just shouting, or people throwing things at each other, or someone being attacked. So the vision is perfect. It means civil, respectful discussions.
Yeah.
Civil, respectful people within these discussions, which possibly means a better outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
a better outcome.
Definitely.
What specializations do you have within your company? So you're the program designer. You have political analysts. What other people do you have within your group?
Well, we all come from, we have two, let's say, lead designers that are part of the co-founding team that come from mediation and facilitation and have decades and decades of experience essentially guiding forward conversations, very critical ones on climate, but also, for example, on gay marriage in the English church, right? So we take a lot and we owe a lot to also these people who have this experience. But then the rest of us, we really come from the think tank field, and we have become self-taught, essentially, process designers, all of us, because to me it's part of also an essential skill set. You can't have a process designer and then everyone else thinks differently, because process design to us is a way of thinking. That's why one of our like hopes, ambitions for the future would be able to do more and more like capacity building in philanthropy, in think tanks, eventually in political parties, anyone who will listen really, to share a certain lens, which is the lens of process design. And I think once you see things through that lens, you can't unsee it. And then you can become the best or worst process designer of the world. That's kind of irrelevant. But you have adopted a way of understanding the care and attention that is required to design things that work.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah.
So if I told you you could have the ideal client,
oh,
what is your ideal client?
That's a really tough one to...
You can give me two if you can't think of only one.
I mean, partially the ideal client, yeah, I'll tell you two. One would be to work a bit closer with political parties. So not just individual politicians, but political parties, because I think that there is a massive potential there to also instill a different political culture, which is a political culture based on, as you said, civility, based on the recognition of dialogue as the ultimate political tool and not just something that you need to do to get to the end. So that would be really wonderful in an ideal scenario to be able to speak directly to the houses that are then forming, right, the politicians that we have. Because let me just say one thing, because there's a big resistance to working with politicians nowadays. People don't want to, it's just a little bit, I think.
I wonder why.
Yes, I understand that. But at the same time, and I understand it, but you can't fix a problem without a big part of the challenge, which is our political actor. Like, we have elected them. This is the democracy. And yes, of course, we can strengthen other forms of democracy to create a more comprehensive and different way of making political decisions. But it's outstanding. Like, it's shocking to me that we are hoping to replace, in a way, politicians completely with, for example, citizens, which is something that some very smart colleagues of mine that are working on citizen assemblies think might be the future. And to me, that's a little bit curious, because I wonder, are we leaving the political class behind? Anyways, sorry, I went a bit on a tangent, but
I will second you on that, because I think you've got those people voted into parliament.
Yeah,
I would love for each of them to get a bit of training or work done of how to be in dialogue with themselves, with the parliamentarians that mm-hmm. they work with, and with the people that they're technically representing.
Yeah.
So I think this training in dialogue, not training mm-hmm. or coaching in dialogue, is mm-hmm. an essential tool they should all have.
Mm-hmm. And also sometimes it's about experiencing it to know the value that it brings to you, which is what I like that we do with the Open European Dialogue. It's getting politicians to experience that there's also a different way of having a political conversation, which might be a tool they want to have in their arsenal on top of everything else, but there's also a different way of having a political conversation. And then the second client, because now you've got me thinking, you know, I say this candidly, and it's also vulnerable to say, I think, but I'm very frustrated with our nonprofit sector, because I think that our potential is massive. But I think a little bit like our political structures, we also haven't really properly updated our methods and our ways of working. And we are struggling to work together. There's thousands of, you know, think tanks, foundations. Everyone's doing their own thing in their silos, which is obviously absolutely understandable. But I would like to put a little bit more of the sort of process design thinking into our sector to figure out how are ways that we can be more impactful, more strategic. Because sometimes it feels like we have these massive resources, but I'm not quite sure if they're always being put to the best use.
I will put it in another way, because I'm from that sector.
Yes.
You have a lot of little groups that are working on something similar. If they do a bit of trading or work within this, they can actually work together to make a critical mass. So it's not three different voices on the same subject.
Yeah.
And then the money that is available will be more effectively or efficiently used, because one consortium is using them.
Yeah.
And when it's one consortium in dialogue, the outcome should be a better, more effective outcome.
Yeah.
So I like that because I've seen it around me. It's a nightmare. You'll be discussing gender-based violence and 30 voices will come out, yet they're not speaking together. They don't need to be from the same space, but they can be on the same page.
Yeah. I just feel like there's massive untapped potential. That's all. And I think that one of, you know, that for me, the way I understand the world through this lens of political process design, there are lots of pockets where we could be way more efficient and impactful. But again, it requires a sort of facilitator. It requires that work of care. So, you know, my wildest dreams, apropos, could become an actor whose job is also to facilitate these actors and to help them to reach their purpose, right, through better designed processes, dialogue spaces, collaboration spaces. It's not just about the dialogue, because we, of course, we focus on that, and I think it's important, but it's also dialogue as understanding that dialogue is the prerequisite, right, to better collaboration. Because one of the only ways to collaborate truthfully is to have trust in each other. No? Collaboration requires risk-taking. It's just how it is. Otherwise, you centralize everything and take no risks. And to take risks, you need to have better trust. And dialogue is the only tool that I know of that can help us to build trust with others. But essentially, it doesn't end there. That is the first step to then empower human collaboration in the political sphere is to do that, those steps. Yeah.
Okay, so you're coming to Cyprus next week.
Yes, I am.
You're coming to Cyprus next week. Is this what you will be talking about? Or something similar?
Something similar. I will be talking about conference diplomacy. So I would like to keep it a little bit less technical vis-a-vis the tools, but think more about along the lines of, you know, what role does our sector and do these conferences have in shaping policy and politics? And I guess my hot take, which I haven't prepared yet, but it'll be something along the lines of, and if we have such a big role, right, if there are so many resources and key political stakeholders that attend, are we designing these conferences and these engagement spaces in a way that is fit for purpose? Do we have it clear what it is we want to achieve? And if so, are we being strategic? How can we be more strategic to not waste a lot of the time, resources, patience, energy that we put into these spaces, right?
Well, I think it's a great thing because the Cyprus Forum team, I think it's the fourth year that they're having this forum. Yeah. They invest a lot of time and money in putting the program together, inviting people. Mm. Very well thought out programs with a good central theme. I was a speaker 2 years ago, speaking on, I'm part of a mediation group, and four women. And I spoke on and the question of gender, ensuring that people understand what gender means. And it's not just a physical thing. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe the amount of thought and work that goes into what they put together. Yeah. And they've got a lot of access to people. So good on you for trying to, I'm sure they're doing fine, but everyone can do with a little bit of help, because they really do have incredible resources. You see people on their agenda and you think, where do they think of them? How do they come into contact with these people?
Mm-hmm.
And so good on you. So maybe next year it'll be even better.
We'll see. To me, it's about, you know, recognizing that this is a different form of skill set that I would like to see more central in our sector. And we are wrapping up, but I have to give you this other example because it just came to mind. You know, I was at a very big foundation gathering with hundreds of young leaders from across Europe. And in theory, the objective of that gathering was to empower a community, a new community of change makers. But we didn't have any time to actually connect with others. You know, the whole day was on a stage. And those are those little elements where you're like, oh, yes, if I'd had a process designer, maybe we could have avoided that pitfall that is so evident. But often because we're caught up with so many hundreds of things we have to do at the same time that we just don't think about this stuff as much as we should.
I remember speaking at a fair number of conferences and thinking, why are there so many panels? Why haven't they put half an hour between one or two panels so you can actually, you heard someone speak and you want to connect with them.
Yes.
Or someone said something, or someone looked like someone and you want to speak to them. Why wasn't that actually thought about? I totally agree with you. They think that this is the title, these are the people I've got to fit it into 2 days. And they don't, I mean, you also need time to drink a cup of coffee and go to the toilet.
Oh, yes.
Simple things like that, okay? Or just go outside and have a cigarette if you're a smoker. But these little things that make a conference more efficient and more, that's the purpose of them, not just to hear a whole bunch of people throwing words at you. It's actually meeting, having words thrown at you and then thinking, oh, that person is into the stuff that I enjoy. So let me see if I can connect with them.
Right. So again, clarity of purpose. Like
exactly.
If we knew that this is the number one objective, then you design the number one objective very solidly into your agenda. And everything else is an extra value added. But often, unfortunately, that's not the case. I mean, how many conferences have we been to where the networking is left at the 15-minute coffee break where you have to run after the one speaker that everyone wants to talk
exactly.
to? Yeah.
Exactly.
We can do better.
Yes, we can in everything. Is there anything else you want to say before we close?
No, I'm just very, very happy for the invitation to speak with you about these things. And it's been intellectually also challenging and curious conversation for me. So thanks a lot for having me. And
I have to say it's the same. It was a challenging intellectual conversation for me too, but I like that. It's something I don't really know a lot about, so I was glad to be challenged intellectually. I hope I can make it to your panel, because I work. I'm going to try and sneak out of my office, but I look forward to at least hearing you online, because it's hybrid as well. And hopefully you will. Are you staying for how many days? Are you staying for 1 day, 2 days? How long are you staying?
No, two whole days. I'll be there.
Just
looking
check.
To connect.
And just make sure you check the weather report, because it is quite warm, but it's always good to bring a light cardi as well. You never know. But check the weather before you come, because as I said, it's 30 degrees and it's 7 o'clock at night.
Wow. Okay. Thanks for the tip.
Okay. I look forward to meeting you maybe at one of the networking events. And thank you for listening. Thank you for speaking with us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And to the listeners, thank you for listening. And let's tune in to Chiara's chat on the Cyprus Forum. Just look for the agenda. She's on the first day at the theatre at 12 o'clock. The theme is called Conference Diplomacy. Chiara, thank you very much. See
you
next week. And have a nice rest of the day in Berlin.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks, open, diverse, free.